Hi, today is January 2nd, 2022. Yay, I got our year right. I'm Todd Ogasawara, and my good friend John Westfall is back from his super secret holiday mission.
Oh, yes.
Welcome back. And I just want to thank Paul Lawler and Ryan Ozawa for stepping in as guest co-hosts while John was away on his super secret mission. Paul, who normally, as I mentioned during our podcast, lives about a mile away from me as a crow flies, although I don't think we have crows in Hawaii, but right now he is, you know, in North Dakota with family, and because of I laugh, it's not funny, because of the airline situation with, you know, massive cancellations every day, he's not sure he can get home tomorrow. So Paul, if you're listening, hope you make it home safely sometime this week. Anyway, happy new year, John. Such as it is. You know, people say, well, you know, last year, 2021, people say, well, 2021 can't be any worse than 2020. And of course it was. And so.
Yeah, I don't think there's any sort of thing that we should say about 2022 has to be a certain way. Yeah. 2022 can be whatever it wants to be because it will be.
That's right. It has free choice. Although I have been saying that, you know, I'm hoping to have a zombie apocalypse free year, and I'm hoping that's not asking for too much because it could happen. But at any rate, hope you have a good one. Hope you had a nice New Year's Eve and everything. It was very noisy and smoky and annoying here.
Yeah, people. We had the usual level of fireworks and gunshots near me because someone said they couldn't understand the gunshots. And I said, well, not all Mississippians can afford fireworks. But they all have guns, so you know, you get the gunshots whether you want them or not. So it was not too bad. We were traveling up until a couple of days before New Year's, and so we're happy to be back. And I've got travel stories and
awesome
updates and all those things.
Looking forward to hearing them. I've really only got, let me see, one news thing I wanted to mention. And that is, and it's something I never used, but it was iconic in its time, and that's the BlackBerry. Apparently, the non-Android BlackBerry, the original BlackBerry. What was the name of the operating system used? I can't even remember. But I remember HP adopted for a while.
I'm trying to remember what they called it. I forget what the name was.
But apparently, January 4th, which is this week Tuesday, the non-Android BlackBerries are going to stop working. So if you're still using one, stop.
whether you want to or not you will be stopped.
It's according to this article in The Verge, is there'll be, whether on Wi-Fi or cellular, there'll be no guarantee you can make phone calls, send text messages, use data, establish an SMS connection, or even call 911. So that sounds pretty dead to me.
They're serious about it.
I mean, it's
not going to work anymore,
whether
you want it to or not.
And I should note, you know, even a SIM-less cellular phone of any kind, not a smartphone, but a SIM-less cellular phone, can still make emergency calls in the U.S. It's, you know, you can still dial 911 even without a SIM. So if it can't dial 911, that's really dead.
This goes nicely into the next thing that I had added to our list. Apple released an ad on January 1st. That is a rather serious ad. Hmm. It is 3 911 calls made from Apple Watches. And, you know, you hear the actual audio, and it basically, their point is that these people were saved because they had an Apple Watch with cellular. And, you know, one person's in a flipped car, another person's in a paddle board that's being taken out to sea, and another person is 20 feet below ground and broke his leg. And so it's interesting, as I kind of put it, this is Apple reminding us how easy it is to use their products to save your life.
But
it does make me wonder. I always buy the LTE-enabled Apple Watch, mostly because I enjoy using the I like the stainless steel, and I've always had the stainless steel Apple Watch.
Yes.
And they don't make the stainless steel without cellular.
Oh, and I didn't know that.
I don't think you can get it without it. I think you always have to have cellular if you're doing the stainless steel. But it makes you wonder if it's even worth not getting the LTE version in that small chance that you might need it one day. Because as you noted, in the U.S., even if you don't have a cellular plan on your Apple Watch, you could still use it to make an emergency phone call.
Oh, I didn't know that about the watch, actually.
I assume so. I've not actually checked it, but it is. It does have a a regular wireless connection. So
I made me
think a little bit about it because I've thought about time and time again. Maybe I should cancel the cellular on my Apple Watch. I don't really use it that much, but maybe it's good to have even for non-emergencies. And occasionally, I do pick up phone calls on my Apple Watch. And one of my friends who just got an Apple Watch said that he was surprised at how good picking up a call on the Apple Watch was for him. So, but yeah, it's definitely a serious ad. If you've not seen it,
I have not seen it. Yeah. I rarely watch, I don't know what you would call it, terrestrial television. I'm usually just streaming stuff. So I don't see a lot of
ads.
Well,
same here, but this is on YouTube. So, you know, you can go find it on YouTube if you want to watch the ad.
Okay. And I don't get ads on YouTube because I'm a Google Play subscriber or whatever you call it these days.
Well, you get the ad if you actually go to the video. That's
go
the
find
ad.
It. Yep. I will definitely go find it. That is interesting. And John has a link to it on YouTube. So it'll be in our show notes, our blog show notes. Okay. Like I said, I don't have a lot to say, although I did want to talk to John about weather because he was traveling and, we had a lot of weather events here. I wasn't sure we would have a podcast this morning because of weather. I actually had to cancel a podcast a couple of weeks ago because we had such bad storms that I had to deal with some work stuff over a weekend. And, but anywho, so John, welcome back and tell us your stories. Tell us your travel story or related stories.
Sure. So I've actually just sent Todd a link to a shared album on iCloud that will let him see some of the stuff that I was doing over the time that I was traveling, because I did still go for my morning walks every morning except one morning. And so I started off in a rural area of Pennsylvania where my in-laws are at. Then I moved to a rural area of Ohio where my parents are at. And then I moved to a suburban cul-de-sac neighborhood where I have a couple friends at. So I have walks that kind of go through all of those spaces and some beautiful pictures from early morning walks.
Nice.
So 10 days, and I was successful in, even though I took my iPad Pro and my laptop, my MacBook Pro, I did not use them at all. I used my Apple Watch, my iPhone 13 Pro, and my iPad mini, and those were the only devices that I used the entire time. So a couple of things, the lessons learned that I thought I would share. The first is that Apple dual charger that charges both an iPhone through MagSafe and your Apple Watch. I've now had it for a little over a year. I think it's a great charger. It's just still really expensive for most people. It's that, but it's small, it's compact, it's good for bedside and travel. So I like that I don't have a separate travel charger anymore. I just take it off the bedside table when I leave and throw it right in the bag with the Anker charger that I have that has two USB-C ports on it. And that charger, along with the USB-C to C cable, also will charge the iPad mini. So all three things I was using, I could basically use one Anker USB-C charging brick that has two USB-C outs on it, and the Apple dual charger and the iPad mini's cable. And of course, my Aura Ring, which is the other piece of tech that I use regularly and need to charge about once every 4 to 5 days is when the Aura Ring needs charging. It charges over USB-C as well. So, unplug it from the iPad mini, plug it into the Aura Ring charger. Speaking of the Aura Ring, I started really looking at, for about a year and a half now, I've worn the Apple Watch and the Aura Ring to bed every night to get the sleep tracking data. And I started wondering, am I really getting anything from having both of these, or could I get away with just the ring? Because obviously that's a little bit less cumbersome than wearing a watch to bed.
Sure.
And it turns out the ring does give you more sleep tracking data than the Apple Watch. It's more granular. So I've come to the conclusion that if you don't need the alarm on your Apple Watch to wake you up, if you're just going to wake up naturally, the Aura Ring is all you really would need. But when you need that alarm, I don't know if you use the alarm on your Apple Watch. I much prefer it waking me up than the iPhone blaring at me to wake me up. I have a friend who just got an Apple Watch, and he disagrees. He wishes the iPhone continued to yell at him instead of just the Apple Watch. But for me, I prefer the more gentler waking up of the Apple Watch than the loud. I had not used the loud wake up in a number of years until yesterday when I tried it again. And yeah, I'll stick with the Apple Watch when I actually need to wake up at a certain time.
I actually use an Amazon Echo Show 5, which is a small, 5-inch display, tiny LCD. It's quite nice, actually, for displaying pictures and whatnot. And I found out something. Sometimes I get up before my alarm. And so I look at the Echo Show, it's interesting because it starts to a few minutes, I think 5 minutes or so before the actual alarm goes off, the screen goes from its nighttime, no lights mode, which is just, I think, a dark background with some numbers on it, dim numbers on it. And it starts to glow dimly at first and then brighter and brighter until it approaches the time to ring the alarm. So it's sort of like lighting up the room, just slight, maybe not lighting up the room is not the way to put it, but it just puts a little bit more light, kind of like the sun rising if you happen to wake up at that time of the day. So I thought that was sort of interesting. The other interesting thing I found out is if I finally got around to sending in my 23andMe genetics, and I know there's a lot of privacy concerns, but I said I don't care, and I do care, but I was curious, so I finally did it. And one of the things it tells you is what time you would probably wake up if, you could choose the time to wake up. And for me, apparently 6:46 a.m. Mm. And I get up way before then. So I'm messing my circadian rhythm, I guess. But that's okay. Yeah.
Well, that is interesting. The Apple Watch, if you have it on charge, will do the same thing. It will start to brighten up as you get closer and closer to the alarm time. But it does not do that on your wrist. If it's on the wrist, it doesn't do it.
Only if it's on a stand or something. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was, like I said, the Oura Ring got me through most of what I needed. A couple of things I was glad to have in my back pocket, so to speak, was a VNC connection to all of my computers at home. So if I did need to get into something and start it, I could do that from my iPhone. I use Screens 4, which is the VNC app that I've used forever on Apple products. And, of course, a couple of VPSs I have. So if I, if you really need to do some computing that you can't do from your Apple Watch or from your iPhone, you can use a VPS or those sorts of things. I did buy, at the middle of last year, I bought Apple's MagSafe charging pad that was announced, and about $100. As you can tell, I buy Apple tech that most people argue is way too expensive, mostly because I'm just curious how well it'll work or how poorly it'll work. I guess I need to experience these things for myself. So that charging pack did come in handy a couple of nights where it was getting toward the end of the day. My phone was starting to go. I didn't really want to, break away and have to go leave my phone on a charger somewhere.
Right.
But it does have a very small capacity, in a sense. Mm. It can basically take your phone from about, nothing to 75% charge. So yeah. it's good when you have a couple hours you just need to get through. But it's not going to be it's not going to give you more than a half a charge to a three-quarter charge.
But it'll get you through a tight spot if you need.
Yeah. And that being said, I think it'll be very useful. I'm hoping at the end of this year, in December of 2022, assuming the world is still around, that I'll be able to make it to Disney World again. And nice. I could see it being very useful since it's really no thicker than an iPhone, about half the size. It'll fit nicely in a back pocket or something like that. Although I would not put it in a back pocket because I don't think sitting on a lithium ion battery is a good idea. But still, it's a useful little thing to have. I've also become convinced I might have found the perfect travel bag, or at least a bag that is very good. I've talked about the Pro Slim Weekender from eBags before that I bought years ago. And as I mentioned, I think the last time I talked about it, they have revised it a little bit. I have an older version, which I honestly think is a better design than the newer version. But the newer version is 99% the same. But if you can find the older version on eBay, that might be something to take a look at. Just look at the differences and see which one you'd prefer.
I have a question for you. So yeah. I'm looking at it on eBags now, and it has a bunch of pictures. Do you know why the outside of the bag is a dark charcoal gray, I'm going to call it, black. The inside is a bright orange. Do you know why?
So if you read the comments, and I think this is sort of what's true about it, it is easier to find things with the orange lining.
Right.
I have noticed that because you see things a lot easier in your bag instead of things black. But that being said, the design is such that you can do most of your finding by just feel.
Yeah.
You know, the layout of everything. So I'm not sure. I think it was just an accent color dot design. And if you look at the indigo version, it also, I think, uses the same orange lining.
Yeah.
So they used to have another color contrast version of it, and I don't remember what the inside lining was on there.
Yeah.
And for those that are curious what they changed between the V2 and V3, in V2, or V1 and V2, in the first version, your toiletries went in the front, and in the back they had a hard-shelled, what they called the cable garage, that was great for chargers and external batteries and anything you didn't want to get crushed. They took that out in the new version, and now they just have your toiletries go on the back in that big space, and in the front you can use that for chargers. It depends on what chargers you're taking. If you're the kind of person that takes a lot more tech, then you probably would like the older version that has tech in the back and toiletries in the front. If you're the kind of person that takes more toiletries, get the new version, and you have more space there. Of course, you can always use these pockets for anything different you want.
Sure.
That's just their recommendation.
But
it is nice when you travel with someone. Like, my wife has a rolling bag. It's nicer for me to carry a backpack, because then I can roll her bag and carry my backpack on my back. So.
Well, that's so nice of you.
I know. It's the kind of technique I am.
I'm kind of the every person for him or herself when traveling. Including my daughter, which is why even as a young child, she had her own small rolling backpack that she could haul behind her when she was 4 or 5 years old. It was pretty funny looking.
And the last thing I learned, if you're a Swiss Army knife kind of person,
I
am, definitely they have a small little pocket sharpener, that Swiss Army makes, their Victorinox tape makes, it's about $14, but always bring a small knife sharpener with you if you've got a Swiss Army knife, because those things, once they go dull, especially if you have the smaller ones and the smaller blades, they're just really frustrating. And so you're going to want to be able to sharpen it if you're traveling.
I was going to say as you were talking, I was going to interrupt you and go, John, I already have a knife sharpener. Why do I need this one? But I see what you're saying. This is like a travel product. Oh, it says product not available in your country.
Well, they're out of it right now. I think you can get it through third parties or other places. But I bought mine years ago on Amazon, maybe.
I didn't copy and paste your thing correctly. No, now it says there's a proxy error. Oh well, it's okay.
You can pick it up on Amazon. I'll put the Amazon link in our show notes.
All right. Now I see it.
Yeah, $17 on Amazon, and you could get really any small knife sharpener would work, but you don't want to end up with a dull Swiss Army knife while you're traveling.
Yeah.
You'll be annoyed.
Yeah, this is really nice. It's really nice, literally nice and small. I've got a big honking one that, you know, it's for scissors and butcher cleavers and all kinds of stuff. So,
well, I don't know what you're cutting up when you're traveling, but for me, it's usually opening packages and, especially at Christmas time, unwrapping things or cutting things open. I'm not usually cutting people or animals open, so I don't need the butcher knife.
I wonder what traveling celebrity chefs carry, if anything. I guess they have people to carry stuff for them, but now I'm kind of curious. Yeah.
They expect their kitchens to be well appointed already.
I was going to mention, I've been buying the Rick Steves luggage for a couple of years now. No affiliation with them is accepted a satisfied customer. And I was just going to say they have a holiday sale going through, well, actually today, the January 2nd. It's like save 20% on all travel bags. I should go see if I should order anything before the sale ends today. I've had a real good experiences with a bunch of their stuff, including which are all carry on, by the way, because the philosophy of their travel company is you never check anything in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I totally agree with that. I hate checking bags, and that's the other nice thing about the weekender backpack that I have. It is small enough to fit under a airline seat, so yeah. it can count. And it's nice that you don't have to fight for overhead bins. You know, you just stow it right under the seat in front of you.
Although I will say, you know, and I keep ragging on this one airline. I've only taken it once, and it was first, last, and only time, because I probably won't be going anywhere for the rest of my life, because I've given up on travel. But whenever we were flying back from Edinburgh to... where were we going? Edinburgh to... oh, golly gee, I forget. Anyway, we're flying back to England from Scotland. And I took a local airline called Flybe, F-L-Y-B-E. And the overhead and the underseat storage areas are so tiny. My bag, which was designed to fit in any conventional... you know, storage space, at least domestic airlines in the U.S., would not fit. And I wasn't the only one. I saw other people struggling to figure out what to do with their carry-on because it wouldn't fit anywhere. I ended up with mine under my legs and just kind of like hid it from the flight attendant who probably was so used to seeing it, just kind of ignored me. In the U.S., you know, they'd tell me, oh, we'd have to take that away or whatever, but they didn't care. So, any rate, Flybe, yeah, you got to have like a toiletry kit is pretty much all you can carry on. Oh, and I also remember they charged like £50 for each check-in bag, which was crazy. Hmm. Yeah, I thought it was crazy expensive. This was 2016 or so. So it's 5, 6, 7 years, almost 6 years ago. Yeah, 6 years ago. Anywho, yeah.
All right. So that was what I learned. I did also have a couple of tech purchases recently mm-hmm. that I thought I'd talk about. So frequent listeners may remember that I have a special place in my heart for 12 South's book cases. Yes.
Which look like books.
But, yeah, they look like books. And so I had resisted because I've been using the Apple wallet
right.
for a while now. And I thought, well, do I really need the book? Well, I bought the book for the iPhone 13 Pro because occasionally you do need the extra, you know, pockets.
And, sure.
You know, place for cash and all that. But what I realized, now that I have both the Apple wallet and the BookBook, is that now that the BookBook is magnetic, so the BookBook has two parts of the case. It's got a shell that goes around your phone, like mm-hmm. a regular phone case does.
Right.
And then the actual wallet and the shell and the wallet will fit magnetically into each other. But since the BookBook is now MagSafe compatible, you can take the Apple wallet and it will fit quite snugly on the back of the BookBook.
The case part, not the yes. folding part. Yeah,
yeah,
nice. And John is sharing
it. And I realized that before the podcast, you could, if you really wanted to, you could actually put it on the back of the actual book.
Oh, case. And it works?
It doesn't have as strong of a grip, but it's got a yeah. strong enough grip that it won't come falling off.
Right. But it won't charge through that, right?
No, but it never does charge. Well, yeah, you're right. Oh. It won't charge. You always have to take this off. The Apple wallet always has to come off to charge anyway. So if you like the BookBook, but you have gotten used to just having the smaller Apple wallet or a similar wallet that only holds one or two cards, you could use them together and have a couple of different configurations, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that is nice if you do find yourself in a situation where you might need to carry cash and three or four cards instead of always just your two cards. So I like that now as a compromise. I kind of alternate between these BookBooks and the Apple cases that I buy for my stuff. So
I'm looking at your next recommendation now. Never heard of it.
Yeah. So the last thing that I purchased, and this is a product that I used a number of years ago, and I think I mentioned it on the podcast at that time. It's called Tap Forms. Hmm. Tap Forms is a small developer. Tap Zap is the name of the company. They only make Tap Forms. But this is about the closest thing you're going to find to Microsoft Access on the Mac. It lets you build different forms. You can link database fields to each other. You can use it for any kind of homegrown databasing feature that you want to write in that you can't do, you know, using other software on a Mac. It's sort of the, if anyone ever used the Bento database platform on the Mac, it's sort of a successor to that, or a spiritual successor to that. So I bought the upgrade and been playing around with it because I've recently gotten more into being a coffee geek, someone who likes to brew coffee in different methods and try out different brew temperatures and all those things. So I wanted to start keeping a database of, you know, what I was brewing and what temperature and how much my ratio was and all those things. And Tap Forms is a good compromise for that. So if you are looking for some form of databasing on macOS, which can sync to your iPhone, iPad, Apple Watch, all of that, take a look. Tap Forms.
What's the pricing? I'm going to open it up on the Mac Store and open up the Apple Store. It is $49.99 US, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which it used to be a reasonable price, and now we think that's way too expensive.
Because well, it's, but it is a desktop. Yeah, it is a desktop app. So, you know, but it's interesting because I know that a couple of the iOS, iPadOS, Apple Store winners were like $30 and things. So, you know, it's becoming more normalized, more, yeah.
Well, and here is the nice thing about both Tap Forms on the Mac and on the iPhone. You do, it is a separate purchase for the iPhone. It's $16.99 for the iPhone, iPad version. Right. But these are one-time purchases. These are not subscription purchases. So anymore, it is harder and harder to find something that you can purchase and not be continually hounded to buy again and again.
Yes, I know what you're saying. And it's funny because one of my favorite games, as you know, John, is the original Plants vs. Zombies, which was, I think, at the time, you know, the astronomical cost of, I think, $6 or $7 for this fine game that has given me many years of entertainment. And so I paid my $6 or $7 because I knew it was a good game. You know, this is like when the iPad first came out, I think, Plants vs. Zombies HD or whatever it was called. And, you know, since then, they've had a whole bunch of different releases in that family, right, of Plants vs. Zombies. And the other day, I thought, you know, it's been 11 years or whatever. I should go take a look at Plants vs. Zombies 2, which came out, you know, like 9 years ago, whatever. And I think, did I pay for it? I can't remember. But, oh my gosh, it's unplayable because of all the ads. You know, I can't get past the ads. I just said, oh, heck with it. I'll shut it down. So that was no fun at all. Just charge me $10 or whatever. It's for a good
game. Yeah, I agree. It's very frustrating to deal with this, but it is what it is. I have a whole spreadsheet of all the random subscriptions I have these days that I do at least go through and knock off some of them every so often.
Yeah. But you know, speaking of Bento, whatever happened to Bento?
It was originally a FileMaker product. Mm-hmm. Originally, I think a Claris product.
Yes, if I remember right. Which is owned by Apple.
Yeah. Yeah, and then discontinued.
It was a fine discontinued product. I liked it.
The last release was 9 years ago.
Wow. So. Wow, I'd forgotten about it until you mentioned this product. I said, I used something like it way back when, you know?
And the only thing I wish that Tap Forms had, which it doesn't have, is it doesn't have a built-in reporting function. Or, you know, usually if you're used to database apps, you've got a reporting function as well that you can use. Tap Forms, it really is all about forms. But at least they do have a flexible layout function now where you could create forms that look more like paper forms, invoices, whatever you want on there. So,
by the way, speaking of its parent company, FileMaker, or parent subsidiary, FileMaker is gone. Support for all product versions of FileMaker end January 1, 2022. So yesterday was the last day FileMaker itself was supported. That's kind of sad because I never used it, but I heard very many good things about it. Mm-hmm.
It is just sort of sad, you know, and you go down the Wikipedia hole of looking at these things. That's where I was looking at Bento, and I was three or four clicks away from my first programming language or first programming platform, which I always joke I was the person that did not start off with BASIC. In fact, I don't think I ever really learned BASIC. I started with Pascal, And my IDE of choice was Borland Delphi back in the mid-90s.
Oh, I remember
so
that.
I'm on Delphi's page right now, and it still exists. It's just not what it used to be. It's more of a freemium license now, but I remember Borland Delphi fondly as the first place that I got into programming.
So Borland is now, oh, this is funny. Am I reading this correctly? Borland is now owned by Microfocus, which is a COBOL company, or was a COBOL company.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. I wonder what it sells these days. Borland history. Oh, this still got stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, requiring. Oh, it's all like package vertical stuff. Change management, mm-hmm. requirements management. Interesting where it ended up. We should do a Jurassic Tech segment where we talk about
all the old things that we used to use and
yeah. What happened to it? What happened to WordStar? What happened to WordPerfect? You know, all of those kind of things. Do you remember HandyBase?
Oh yeah, I remember HandyBase.
DDH software. I just looked it up and it still exists. I didn't know that. I don't know if it's still the same product I remember. Well, let's see. Yeah, apparently. HandyBase. Yep, it's still the same fast relation. I guess it is. Database. Interesting. I wonder what it costs. I got to go look it up. I will go look it up. Now that I'm on the website. So tell me a little bit about your trip. I'm really curious because, as you know, I stopped traveling a couple of years ago.
You can still do it.
I mean, no, I don't want to. Give up.
Well, so travel was not too bad. We traveled completely by car.
Mm-hmm.
So we went from Mississippi to Pennsylvania to Ohio back through southern Ohio, back down to Mississippi over the course of 10 days. The weather played nicely the entire time.
Good.
In fact, it was
good.
Pretty warm in most places. Of course, this continuing pandemic thing makes life a little bit frustrating when you're trying to figure out. There were not really any interesting requirements or anything anywhere we went, but that's also middle America and its dislike of being told what to do. And, you know, it was pretty easy going, which is not always the case. We've traveled this time of year pretty much every year, and with the exception of last year, due to the aforementioned global crisis. And we had a good amount of travel this time. But I did go out. Like I said, I've been doing these morning walks now for about 2 years almost. A year and a half. It'll be 2 years in May. And so I went out in some cold mornings, but I got some pretty nice shots on the iPhone 13 Pro. Low light, man, it can create some really beautiful shots.
Nice.
In the middle of the night. So I'll actually find one that we can share with the show notes and just sort of show the interesting. And I think I just dumped them all in the share iCloud that I sent you. So
okay. Oh, how did you send it? Oh, you sent it to me via messages or something?
Yeah. You've got it as one of those wonderful shared iCloud albums, which was really just easy enough for me to do. So that's how you got it that way.
I don't see it yet, by the way, but that's okay. I'll figure it out. All right. Well, that's about all I've got. I'm glad to hear you. Yeah, I was kind of worried that during your travels, you know, with all these weather issues all over the place, you know, brush fires and giant storms, and we just had a heck of a lot of rain over our New Year's, starting New Year's Eve, really, and continuing till this morning. I think our flash flood alert just ended. So, yay.
Well, we did go through Bowling Green, Kentucky on I-40 or I-65, which is where the tornadoes had hit a couple of weeks ago. And there were a lot of, you could see the damages from the highway. You know,
oh,
there were
boy.
Things that were ripped down. We did stop there for lunch, and where we were at in sort of a commercial area, nothing was problematic. But from the highway, you could see torn down signs, buildings with tarps over the roofs, and broken trees and that sort of thing. So severe weather definitely is amping up in the country.
Indeed. All righty. Well, messages on my Mac just broke. I can't even close it, so I don't know what's going on. That's okay. Can I force it from here? Yes, quit from here. Yay, that worked. Relaunch it. Alrighty. And that is all I have. I just, you know, just was a kind of a, it was a lot going on, but not much of a tech. I'm just trying to think if there's anything of note, except I can't think of anything of note. No new apps. I did want to note one thing that surprised me. So my wife, like you, got an iPhone Pro, or iPhone 13 Pro. I think that's what you have. Mm-hmm. Or can't remember if you bought the Max or not. But she got just a Pro. And I was surprised when she says, what does this mean, 5G? She first noticed it when she and my daughter were traveling New York. And then I said, oh, they must have, you know, AT&T must have 5G over there. So, you know, lucky for you, you should have faster speeds. And she comes back and she says, I still see 5G on my phone. I says, no, that can't be. We don't have any 5G where, you know, I mean, there's 5G nearby that I was aware of, but it was all like downtown and we're not in downtown. Mm-hmm. So I looked at her phone and sure enough, it said 5G. So I looked at the map and yeah, we have pretty wide 5G coverage. We haven't done any speed tests or anything, but I thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, my 12 Pro, of course, has no 5G, which is okay. And, but we do have 5G here, which I found surprising.
Well, I can top that. My in-laws, they are on a rural road in Pennsylvania where the fastest internet they can get is AT&T DSL.
Right, you mentioned that, yep.
Which is 2 megabits per second down on a good day.
Yeah.
But at the end of their road, about a mile and a half down, I have 5G.
No Verizon. Way.
So, yeah, they are just supremely unlucky where they are at.
Wow. Wow. That's just not nice.
Yeah, it is supremely, and it's just a geographical thing as well with them. They also do not have a cable line down their road. The cable companies never just thought it run. Was in their interest to put a cable line down. So the only connectivity they have to the outside world is
telephone,
DSL. Plain old telephone. Yeah, POTS lines from 1940, 1930, around there. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, the good news is that DSL runs over, you know, good old telephone lines, PSTN, copper cable, so that's all you need. So, you know, that's a saving grace.
It doesn't do it that nicely, but it doesn't. Nope.
Yep, when you got nothing else, it's something.
Yeah.
It's better than nothing. Yeah, cable companies, so basically the cable companies say that they want a minimum of 25 customers per linear mile before they'll consider laying cable, right? So if you're in a rural area, it is often tough to get 25 paying customers in a linear mile. Or 25 customers of any kind. You know, just people. So I can see that. All righty. Well, that brings to a close our first podcast, 2022. Welcome back, John. Again, thanks to Paul Lawler and to Ryan Ozawa for sitting in with me and keeping me company during the John Super Secret Mission holiday period. And I think I'd like to continue on with, you know, touching bases with some old friends in 2022. I think that was I thought that was a lot of fun, first of all, to reconnect with folks that, you know, we are in contact with. We just haven't spoken to in real time. We just mostly do asynchronous stuff. So I'd like to continue that. I know some folks that were trying to get earlier, just some weather things and other stuff came up that couldn't do it. So Frank McPherson and Don Sorsinelli and a bunch of other friends that, you know, were scheduled to be on, but just something came up, mostly on my side. Next week, I think something is coming up, I know for sure. So there will not be a podcast with me. John may do it by himself. Maybe John and Don will just get together, record something. But
things have happened.
It has happened, right? I mean, you know, when I was stuck in traffic that one day. So, any rate, Mobile Views Podcast, what number is this? We're getting up there in numbers. 388 is in the can, and we will talk to you next time.